Are you sure you'd like to start this class now? okay, what was I going to say? For those of you that did come in just in the last few minutes, no slides tonight, but does everybody have one of the handouts? Okay, everybody? Greg, thank you very much for that. Now, what I'm trying to do, Brett, as you can see from the title, we've got 66 proverbs to deal with concerning the fool. That's a lot of foolishness. So how do you tackle something that big? In one sense, it's the biggest collection that we've taken on so far. And so this is really, very subjective. I just, continue to massage these verses and try to rearrange them and think of the best way to group them, particularly on the second page when you get down into the area of the last few sections, how to handle fools and then just miscellaneous. You may choose to want to rearrange them in different orders of your own. I gave everybody the list over the course of the last 2 weeks of Proverbs on fools in the biblical order, just chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, like that. And so you should have that copy. And then how to arrange them, though, so that you can reference them in your own little private concordance is really problematic. So since I wanted to start off with the danger first, and that was the main point I made last week, is that fools are profoundly dangerous. They're radioactive. And you want to know who they are. You want to identify the fools in your life and then protect yourself from them and figure out what to do about them. Because they really are. It's like a contagious disease. They're going to do you harm if you're not careful. So last week, though, since everything collapsed on me, I forgot to file and all that, then we just went through in the numerical order that we had last week. But fortunately, most of those that had to deal with the danger came up last week. So as you look at the sheet that I've just given you on the title page where it says they are dangerous to themselves, all four of those proverbs we considered last week. So I'm just going to read them right off the sheet here. 132, the waywardness of the naive will what? It'll kill them. And the complacency of fools will destroy them. 10:8, the wise of heart will receive commands, but a babbling fool will be ruined. Two verses later, he who winks the eye causes trouble, and a babbling fool will be ruined. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of understanding. And we also consider the first one that's in the next category. They're not only dangerous to themselves, but they are dangerous and or just annoying to others as well. 10:14, we also saw last week, wise men store up knowledge, but with the mouth of the foolish, ruin is at hand. Now, arrange those as I did, putting 10:14 in a separate category, because as you can see there, the first four really deal with the fool himself. He's doomed. To remain in a state of foolishness is to invite disaster. You're asking for it. And you'll be able to tell, as we get through 66 verses too, Solomon is placing blame. God is speaking to these people because, but for a few pieces of advice, we'll look at probably not tonight or next week, he's charging them with this, and they ought to do something about it. There should be a correction made. They're not entirely helpless. And we're not talking about people who are born with only, half a brain. We're not talking about people who can't, muster as much of an IQ number as there are pennies in a dime. That's not what we're talking about. These are people who are disastrously, dangerously foolish. But they're responsible. They're culpable that God is punishing them because they deserve to be punished. They're not helpless and innocent victims. They're sharing in this. Now, not on the page, you tell me from last week, but most especially from the first class when we were studying in chapter 1, why is God so angry with the fool? Because God, in chapter 1, personified as wisdom, or wisdom personified as a woman, and they both were true. We saw verses that tied it all together.
is crying out in the street. Don't be a fool.
I correct this problem.
And so they're held responsible because they're guilty. Because they played a role in this. Because this is to some extent willful and willing. It doesn't have to be this way. Well, in chapter, in the first session, if they were the only people that ever get hurt, you know, that'd be one thing, but they're dangerous to others as well in the first listing under that second category, chapter 10, verse 14. Wise men store up knowledge, but with the mouth of the foolish, ruin is at hand. Ruin for him and ruin for others. And that's why I put it there as a sort of a segue from one category to the other. You know, for a fact, in the first group, the fool's ruined, but now it's just ruin is at hand. And I think the idea there is that ruin is kind of radiating out. It's not limited to the fool himself, as the other verses are going to show us. So, in 13:20, he who walks with wise men will be wise. But the companion of fools will what? Will suffer harm. Now, I told Donna, I've been tormented now for about 2 days trying to decide whether or not I was going to use a particular illustration tonight. I finally decided not going to do it as far as putting it up on the screen. But I would like to spend a minute and ask, how many of you heard about the worst ever, I guess it is, in this particular town at least, in Ohio, this car crash that took place about 2 days ago? About 2 days ago, a Honda Passport was stolen. This particular car has two bucket seats with a console up front, so you can only put two people up front, theoretically. And then the next row, which is the only other row of seats, are also very bucket tight. There's only three seats there. Well, how many people are designed to get in this car? How many cars are designed for how many people? Five. But they had eight kids in there. Eight kids between the ages of 14 and 19 stole a Honda Passport. There were seven boys and one girl. And the girl was the oldest one in the bunch. She was 19. And she was at the wheel. And they show pictures all over the news, and you can see the deal. Nice straight road, goes into a corner, no big deal. 35 mile an hour zone. Last I heard, they figured she was maybe pulling 80. Didn't make the corner. Hit the guardrail, flipped it over, landed it upside down, none of them wearing seat belts, thrown out the windows, one of them wound up underneath in 5 feet of water. Six out of the eight are dead. Why are six teenagers between the ages of 14 and 19 dead? Because of foolishness. Because of foolishness. Now, I want to be careful here. We don't get all high and mighty, and put them down and everything, because we have already learned foolishness is what in the heart of a child? Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. Foolishness is necessary. Foolishness is in the heart of a child, and it's understandable. It's excusable. Children are this. And they're dangerous. They're dangerous to themselves. They're dangerous to others. Could have been somebody coming the other way. Because she had to bowl through the other lane to hit the guardrail to flip the thing and land it in the pond. She had to cross the lane to do that. What was it? It was early in the morning. Who knows what they were doing, partying somehow, No drugs, no alcohol involved. Those reports came back today. No drugs, no alcohol. Just what?
Joyriding.
Just joyriding. What killed them? Foolishness killed those kids. Now, was that necessary?
No.
I taught driver's ed. If she's 19 years old and you get a license at 16, which of course you do, how long has she been driving?
3 years.
Now, just for fun though, how many years do you have to drive? We taught this in driver's ed. How many years do you have to drive before you have just the skill of an average driver? I heard somebody say it, Carol was close, but it's 5. They figure you have to get 5 years of experience before you can even count yourself as being average, let alone, you know, a good driver. Just average. By the way, the average driver, how good are they? Terrible. The average driver's awful. You know, I'm not saying they're good, it's just average, and that's terrible. Okay? So, I wouldn't show any of the pictures. I just thought it was going to be too much. I don't want to be too harsh with the kids either. But Solomon wants us to understand there is dread and mortal danger. And in chapter 10, verse 14, the first one that we have, wise men store up knowledge, but with the mouth of the foolish, ruin is at hand. Somebody suggested with their mouth that the car should be stolen. Somebody else suggested that they ought to all lie to their parents, because those stories have all come out. You know, where the two kids each tell the other's mother that we'll be staying at the other guy's house and they don't go to either one. Mom and dad didn't check. Now the kids are gone. Okay? Somebody had to decide we're going to put 8 kids in the, you know, 5 seats. Okay? They were begging her, we understand, to slow down and stop it. She'd been reckless and some of the kids in the car were trying to stop her. Ultimately, 6 boys between the ages of actually 14 and 18 are dead. Why? Because of foolishness. In 13:20, he who walks with wise men will be wise. And I would suggest would have been in bed that morning sound asleep too. But the companion of fools will suffer harm. And in 17:12, let a man meet a bear robbed of her cubs rather than a fool in his folly. Now, most of us can get that bears are dangerous. Anybody got questions on that? Bears are dangerous. Okay? And if you rob a bear of her cubs, then how dangerous is she? Now she's gone nuclear. Okay? You would rather meet the bear. You would choose that first over what? The fool in his folly. That's dramatic what Solomon is saying to us. And that's why I began the class by saying, we better, you know, figure out how to identify that fool. Because in that last one, 13:20, what he's just said is, you know, the wise person is not going to get in the cage with the bear. The wise person is going to walk out in the woods and go cub hunting. You know, wise person isn't going to do these kinds of things. The wise person also is not going to spend a lot of time with fools. They will have to deal with them on occasion, but the wise person is alert to the danger and will protect themselves the way you would from a bear. You know, I'm sorry, I just realized, I think Michael had a hand up here a minute ago. Didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. When you're talking about the driver's ed thing, it just reminded me of when my driver's ed instructor for one of our classes took 3 or 4 of us to a parking lot and a store just to sit there and watch.
I love that technique. Didn't ever employ it. I wish I'd known about it. I might have done so. My favorite thing was just all over town, I would come to certain intersections, and I would just, you know, as we were approaching, I would ask the kids, what do you see? What do you see? What do you see? None of them would ever see it. If you're coming up to an intersection, or you're at any location, and you see 14 or 15 skid marks, then what? Pay attention! Hey, something goes on here. Something happens right here. Now, you know, when you see skid marks, how many people drive around looking for the skid marks? Nobody. The wise instructor, though, was trying to teach the kids to find the clues. Okay? Same way you do with bears. If there's any kind of sign, I don't know what bear sign is, you know, ask Jerry, I guess, but this, you don't want to do this. And so Solomon here is not just saying, hey, they're stupid, and here's cute ways to say it. Solomon is saying they are dangerous, and here's how to recognize it. Now the wise person will do something about it. They'll avoid the problem. So 13:20, he who walks with wise men, though, will be what? What does it take to be wise in that verse? What's all it take?
Hang out with them. Identify who they are. Spend time with them. Rubs off.
And if a couple of those kids who didn't have seats and didn't have seatbelts to fasten had said, you go ahead, I'm not going to get in there without a seatbelt. They would have at least had a, those two would have had a chance. The other ones might have put their seatbelts on.
So many other ways this could have gone. So many other ways this could have gone. And yet, and you can hear all the parents that's in the interviews and everything, they're all saying, these were not bad kids. No drugs, no alcohol. They were just kids. Like your kids. My kids. And then, in this split second, got caught up and, you know, carried away. And out of control. And into the grave. Oh. And how many parents want it back? The whole town wants it back now. Sooner a company bears robbed of their cubs. Now, 26:6. He cuts off his own feet and drinks violence, who sends a message by the hand of a fool. Well, there's an interesting one. Well, what, you know, translate this for me. Boil this down. To whom would this be particularly important?
Kings.
Pardon me?
Kings.
Kings? Who else?
Employers.
General.
Yeah.
Employers in general, right? Anybody that, you know, has something they need somebody else to do. So, employers is what it is. If you're ever thinking about using somebody to do something for you, what should you first think?
Are they wise?
Are they wise or are they foolish? And if they're foolish, then what? Send them out to play with the bears. You kind of have things to do. See? Now, is there anything wrong with that?
No.
You've seen it, and I've seen it, and we all want to be fair, and we believe in justice and equal rights, you know, and a hundred other things, but we've also seen a lot of legislation that does not allow people to be wise. Most won't let them do it. In the post office, we talk about it a lot, you know. It is just almost impossible to fire a postal employee. It's just almost an appointment for life. It was awesome. I hope you watch this. And if I'm told you this story, you'll forgive me. But one guy that they would call me to fill in for because he was so drunk they couldn't get him out of bed in the morning. He lived real close to the office, so when he would show up or not show up, the other employees would walk a block or two and they'd knock on his door and they'd try to get him dressed and, you know, get him down to work. He couldn't do it. Finally, they'd done this so many times, you realize, you know, the mail has to be delivered. We can't do this. So did they fire him? No, they gave him a clerk. Now he's greeting people at the desk. When they busted him for stealing $20,000 from the post office, did he get fired? No, he went into an alcohol treatment program. Sponsored and paid for by the post office. Okay, fire him? We can't do that. Now, there's about 400 people depended on this guy to do what? Deliver the mail. What's the verse say? He cuts off his own feet and drinks violence. Hey, give me two cappuccinos and a cup of violence. And why? Sends a message by the hand of a fool. Now think about that one for just a minute. Was there anything that you could think of back in Solomon's day or in our day that could be more important than sending a message? Tens of thousands of things are more important than sending a message, aren't they? Tens of things are more important than sending a message. So when he says that you're cutting off your own feet and drinking violence, if you send a message by a fool, what does that suggest if you've got something more important to do? You're asking for ruin
disaster and death, as we saw in the preceding verses, aren't you? Okay. So, we come to the next one, 26:10. Like an archer who wounds everyone, so is he who hires a fool or who hires those who pass by. What does hires those who pass by mean? If you're just hiring people that are passing by, then
you don't know
who they are. I don't have a clue who this person is. Okay? So, I don't know anything about him. Is he a fool or not? I don't know. But what's the point of it all? How many of you would want to spend time with a guy who has a bow and arrow and he's shooting constantly and doesn't know a thing about how to handle that bow? You want to be around him? Might take your chances with the bear first, right? Give me the bear. Like an archer who wounds everyone, so is he who hires a fool or who hires those who pass by. Know who you're hiring. Understand whether or not it is wise to do so. Do not feel like you just have to hire anybody and everybody. Be careful about it. 27:3. A stone is heavy. You know, and again, you go, well, duh. And sand is weighty. Sure it is. That's why we make sandbags, you know, and then we keep the water out. Got a lot of purposes for sand. But the provocation of a fool is heavier than both of them. So you get this picture. Guy's got a big rock in one hand, okay? He's got a bag of sand in the other. You go along like this. Okay, how fleet of foot are you? How athletic are you? How effective are you if you're burdened with all of this? If you're carrying a big rock in a bag of sand, you're probably miserable. It's what he calls the provocation of a fool is heavier than both of those. So, if you hang out with fools, or you employ fools, hire fools, use fools, if you do these things, the fool is provoking you. He provokes you like a bag of sand and a heavy rock. In other words, he's a burden to be borne. You're going to suffer. You'll be miserable and ineffective. So, when you get up in the morning, after your cup of cappuccino and your violets, how many say, let me go get a big rock and a bag of sand and start my day? Okay. Well, if you're going out to spend the day with a fool, that's what you're doing. Hey, somebody else had a hand up. There we go, Carol.
I sort of see this as you're talking about someone who's sending a fool out. That's supposed to be their emissary. And he just wreaks havoc because he's not doing what, not only doesn't he do what the boss tells him, but he is going to create a hornet's nest out of everything that he does. Sort of in the way that this young lady who was driving is provocating, is heavier than that, because she is bringing down on her family not only this shame, but maybe legal things that are going to...
You know, good for you, because that wave hasn't started yet. And I was thinking the same thing. It's either 2 days or 3 days. I can't remember which it is. I fully expect by the end of the week to hear about the lawsuits, don't you? Yeah. In the same week, it's totally unrelated. I was laughing about this with Donna. But in the same week, I saw another news report. It was video, tape news report. And the woman wouldn't allow her face to be shown, so all they showed was her feet. So here are these bare feet in sandals. And then you hear her talking. And her son, also 14, had stolen a car. And he had rolled it and completely destroyed it. You know, total loss. It was, in fact, pretty nice. A Jeep, was it Cherokee, I guess they call them. And so pretty nice car. And, you know, he had totally destroyed it. So here's mom's feet saying how it's the fault of the people that he stole the car from. So why is this? And I don't know. It really stuck in my head because I saw this poor police officer, you know, is having to report to the news. Okay. But, she says, the problem is because the people that owned the car had left the keys in it. okay? And the cop was explaining, you can't sue them. And the cop was saying, now, it may not be smart, and it may not be secure to leave your keys in the car. But is it illegal? No. So is it their fault that the 14-year-old son stole the car and wrecked it? No. You can charge him with stupid if you want. Go ahead. But, you know, the cop is trying to explain, but you can't sue him. It's not illegal. Okay? Sure. There's all these excuses. There's all these ramifications. There are all these things, brethren, that are caught up in it. And that's why Solomon's got 66 Proverbs on the topic. In the back. That's exactly it. Many fools are raised to that high honor. That's how they get there. It's because they were taught to be, you know, this way. All right, so last one now, in the category of dangerous and or annoying to others, 29:9. When a wise man has a controversy with a foolish man, the foolish man either rages or laughs, and there is no rest. And that was the main reason I put or annoying to others when I'm into a category there. And I think we've touched on this one before, so I don't want to spend a whole lot of time with it. Is it possible for a wise person to avoid every controversy with a fool? No. And especially not in, you know, as litigious a society as ours. That we have just become astonishingly, you know, evil, I think, in that regard, trying to sue everybody for everything. A true story, brethren, I read about this. It's been quite a few years ago now. But a woman sued and succeeded and received a judgment against a hospital because when they put her through the x-ray machine, she lost all of her psychic powers. What are you going to do with that? If she was psychic, then why did she... It makes you real, doesn't it? It makes you real. Because people have learned that you can sue, and even if you would lose, then what? My parents got sued for $500,000 and they won. They lost $50,000 defending themselves and 3 years of their lives. I watched my parents suffer like you can't imagine for 3 years because they lived in terror of losing this lawsuit and not being able to pay up $500,000. What were they sued for? Well, my folks raised horses. And they were show horses, expensive horses. And they had a stud. And so this couple came and bred their mare to my folks' stud. And the baby never did win a horse show. Exactly. What guarantee does any foal have that it's going to win horse shows? None. But they sued my folks. Dragged them into court. Now, you have to understand my mom. My mom doesn't brook this kind of stuff. My mom's a scrapper. So she fought. It's primarily my mom that was involved in it. Dad, of course, is involved, but mostly my mom. And so she fought it. Won. And they, in order to win, they lost $50,000 in 3 years. But what do most people do?
Countersuit.
Yes, and you can have a countersuit. But what do most people do?
You sell.
You give them $10,000 to walk away. Okay, maybe my folks would have been money ahead. Guess what they would later learn? These people have been making a living out of this scam for years. They'd done it time and time again before they got to my folks. It was an old story with them. They're just picking the victim and knowing that they're going to torment them enough that they'll probably pay up anything, something, you know, to get rid of them. When a wise man has a controversy with a fool, you can't avoid all of them. But what is the fool going to do? Two things are named in 29:9. What are they? Either rages or laughs. And how much rest do you get in the midst of that? None whatsoever. When you get into a controversy with a fool, is there any way to come out happy? No way to come out happy. How can you reason with somebody who's putting on a big show of anger? Can't reason with them. Somebody's laughing their heads off. Can you reason with them? They're impervious to what? Reason. Wisdom. Fools are impervious to wisdom. So, if you don't know to avoid them like bears in the woods, and you find yourself sucked up into one of these things, then what? So dangerous. You could lose everything. You could lose your life. You could lose your home. You could lose everything you can imagine. One thing you lose for sure is your peace of mind. You are not going to have a moment's rest till you can escape this. Okay? Any comment or question on the first two groups? Bill. Are you sure about that?
Trying to make people change their behavior by taking away the thing that they use for their behavior.
I expect you've all heard about this, but what Mayor Bloomberg was doing was, you know, it got a law pushed through that you couldn't sell a sugary drink in a 16-ounce or larger container unless you're a Safeway store where they do it all the time, like 32 ounces a pop, you know, that's a problem. But you couldn't do it if you were in a restaurant, you know, and that sort of thing. And then he pushed the whole thing through. It was supposed to start, I think, Monday or last Friday or whatever, sometime this week. You know, the day before, a judge stepped in and said, no, you know, couldn't be implemented, and this is what Bill's talking about. Okay? Now, this is what I say. Is it possible for a wise person to avoid every foolish person? No. And in a litigious society, you could get sued or lose your rights, depending on your viewpoint here. You know, and there's anything you personally really can do about it. But if you can, what is all of Solomon's advice about? Identify and avoid. Protect yourself. Okay? Great. Well, and it doesn't matter because you'll see both. I think of a Bible study I had with a Mormon here 1 to 2 years ago. It's been fairly recently. And I had shown him, you know, just about as conclusively as you can, that the foundation stone of Mormonism, I mean the cornerstone that everything is built on and radiates from, was false. Who can tell me, by the way, what is the foundational cornerstone, most important thing in Mormonism? And if you take that away, then all of Mormonism collapses. What do you think?
Tablets.
Pardon me?
The tablets of brass.
I still can't hear. I'm sorry. Say what?
Tablets of gold.
Okay. Well, that's true. But there's something even more foundational than that.
Jesus and God failed the first time and
they're
doing it right.
Okay. That's essentially what it is. But I'll use these terms. Mormonism is completely predicated on the proposition that the Bible was not preserved entire and without error, that it is riddled with mistakes and omissions. That is the foundation of Mormonism. And since the Bible, they say, is riddled with omissions and mistakes, then what do we need? We need the Book of Mormon to fix it. See? So I took him over to Matthew chapter 24 and verse 35, where Jesus says, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Okay? If I took him over there, we read it. Do you know what he did? He started laughing. Ha 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 ha! And he actually rocked back in his chair away from the table, up on two legs. And then he got up and left and never came back. He did not offer one syllable of explanation or argument or a verse, you know, nothing. He just stared into the face of the abyss. His entire religion is based on the belief that Jesus was dead wrong in Matthew 24:35. That statement is not true. So what did he do? And I was sitting at the table with two other guys. There were four of us at the table. And we were looking at this guy. And he got up and left. Never came back. Now, how much peace of mind do we have at the table? How do you feel right now about that?
Empty.
Kind of riled you up, doesn't it? You do. You feel empty. You feel angry. You feel frustrated. You know, you feel sad. But in the face of that, you can't feel good about it. Then no matter what, you know, it's just a misery. That, I think, is one of the more important of these passages. Because, you know, the picture of the bear will stick with you. And, you know, we understand we want to avoid, you know, those things. But this particular one about recognizing how they behave and how it's just going to rob you of the joy of life to have to spend time with these people sort of rounds the whole thing out and gives you a pretty powerful reason to say, you know, I need out of here. I don't want to be around fools. Okay, so let's move on to the next section then. They're also dangerous and disappointing to parents. And because we had a whole section on child raising and parenting, we've already looked at all of these. So we're going to read them, but, you know, we won't need it. I mean, we can. If you want to talk about them, we will, but we've already covered these. So in 1913, a foolish son is destruction to whom now? Destruction to his father. And the contentions of a wife are a constant dripping. Well, we saw that one with regard to wives, too. We've actually used this one twice. 1520, a wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish man despises his mother. He who sires a fool does so to his sorrow, and the father of a fool has no joy. Now, he who sires a fool, brethren, that's pretty basic. Well, that's laying aside all the instruction and everything, and maybe even taking away some responsibility from the father. I don't even know that I want to blame him. You know, but still, whether this child is capable or incapable or chose to be foolish or couldn't help it, what about the father? That child is his sorrow. He has no joy. It will not go away. A foolish son is grief to his father in 1725 and bitterness to her who bore him. This is just the fact of the matter. And so, what's the only way to ensure that you never suffer like these parents? That's it. And that's what I'm looking for. The only way to ensure that you never have this happen is don't have any kids. Now, we're all laughing. And I'm glad you are. Everybody's laughing. But I got a call from Florida this week and spent 3 or 4 hours studying with a guy who had to go, you know, teach a class on the subject of marriage, divorce, and remarriage. So he and I did a long-distance telephone Bible study on 1 Corinthians 7 and went through every single chapter with him. It took me a couple hours, several hours with him. Now, at the beginning, in the first verse, and at the end of that chapter, when he's talking to parents, what does Paul say about getting married? You'll be happier if you don't. That's what he said. And to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord, then what? Don't get married. Now, that's Paul's advice, and he specifically tells us in more than one place that what he's saying in that chapter, he's not binding on anybody. You don't have to be single. You don't have to be married. You don't have to get divorced. None of the things he is saying right there, anybody has to go do. There are choices that you have at your disposal. Okay? But in the end, what was the marital condition that he recommended above all others? Be like he was. He said he had a gift, and he wished that everybody else had it too. Okay? Now then, you're not laughing now. We're still on laugh because what is the natural order? And God has plenty to say about how wholesome and upright and good and desirable and in fact a worthy woman type of wife in Proverbs. We found out it's a gift from whom? It was a gift from God. Okay? All these things still fit together though because for a fact, you take the worthiest man there ever was, he marries the worthiest woman that ever was, you put the two together and they spend a lifetime together as husband and wife. Okay? Well, it's going to be the best there ever was. Will it be free of problems? No, you have problems. See? You're just trading one set of problems for another set of problems. So, let's go on. Away from these poor parents, true enough, best if you never have any, but a lot of that heartache would also come. Life's greatest joys as well. Jimmy. In view of the present distress is what Jim's referencing. She's absolutely right. There was a present distress that he actually referenced in that chapter. People wonder what that was, you know, and I'm not sure I can answer the question either.
I think it's because of persecution.
Okay, that's right. But I think it is still true, persecution or not, that to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord, married or unmarried, is good for a man not to touch a woman. That's the first verse. That's good. It's a condition you can choose. Jim's right. Most people don't. They had a current distress that made it even more so. But I don't think that distress is the only reason why he said it. I think it's still true distress.
Why create
Eve? Pardon?
Why create Eve? Because he knew man needed a mate.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not recommending everybody go through life single. Though it would bring on the end of the world a lot sooner. In about one generation, you might guess. See, I'm not arguing with Jim at all. But to say, Paul lays that on the table as of equal value and points out that that individual who marries is going to have different problems than the individual who doesn't, and they're going to have more problems. You have to hammer out a relationship if you're married. You don't have to have them around a relationship if you're not. See that? It works together. So, most people get married. Why? Using 1 Corinthians 7, why do most people get married? Because they don't have... We touched on it just a minute ago. Somebody had. What is it they don't have? Paul's gift. There's your answer for Adam and Eve and the rest of the world. If you can, fine. But the whole chapter is predicated on the fact that most people don't have that gift, and so lacking that gift, then what should you absolutely do? And that's what he encourages throughout the chapter. Get married. Sure. Some are eunuchs for this reason, some for that reason, some for another, you know. But the apostles had first said, well, if that's the way it is with a husband and his wife, well, then what? Maybe we shouldn't know how to do this. Well, it is the way it is with husband and wife. Okay, so that covers the parents, and we've done all that, you know, before. Let's see, we got 10 minutes or so. Let's try to see if we get through the next block anyway. These were just proverbs that had to do with the fool's mouth. And so most of them also had something to say about the disaster that attends it. So it made that group. In 18:6,
A fool's lips bring strife, and his mouth calls for blows. Now, if you look at the bottom category, I could have put that one down in deserves punishment, too. And for a lot of these, you could put them in more than one category. But here in 18:6, a fool's lips bring strife. That's what's coming. There is no rest, remember, in 29:9. If you're hanging out with a fool every time he opens up his mouth, there's going to be strife. Now, by the way, can you tell me why that is? What's the only thing that can come out of a fool's mouth? Foolishness. Okay? And when you see foolishness, what do? You oppose it. You try to correct it. You try to fix it. You at least say, well, I'm not going to do that. When a fool offers a suggestion, what do? You decline. But if he says yes, you say no, what do we call that? Strife. See? You've got contention. You've got opposition. You've got conflict. So anytime you're around a fool, every time he opens his mouth, you should be in opposition if you're wise. There is no way to avoid strife. There is no way to avoid confrontation with a fool. Because whatever he says is foolish, and a wise man can't go that route. Okay, Carol?
Well, a foolish man also,
when
you've got two people that are starting to have a little banter back and forth, he's going to encourage them to take it further. And also, he's going to be the first one to shout, fight, to get a whole crowd around and keep it going. So, he's the one, the instigator, who makes everything a lot worse.
We're going to see a lot more about it, too. There's my 5 minutes, but you're going to see more about that very thing. Now, but we'll come back to this in the category at the bottom of this page. But just note the last half of 18:6. What does that call for? He needs to be punished. He should be disciplined somehow. There needs to be, an opposition and a stop to this. He ought to be restrained. There should be punishment for that. Is there always?
No.
No, and probably most of the time not. So trouble's coming. In 18:7, again, I could have put this up with the first category, that they're dangerous to themselves. A fool's mouth is his ruin, and his lips are the snare of his soul. Well, not only is everybody else, having no rest, but he's not happy either. The fool's also involved in the argument. And so, he snares his own soul. He creates the controversy, but he also creates, ultimately, the problem and the disaster. 15:7, the lips of the wise spread knowledge, but the hearts of fools are not so. You can ponder that one for a while. I'm not real sure. It sounds to me maybe like Solomon was just using a kind of a poetic device. If I had to pick between what was more valuable, a heart or lips, I guess I would pick the heart, not the lips. If I had to pick something that, was more central, useful. But in 15:7, he says, the lips of the wise spread knowledge, but the hearts of fools are not so. May have just been sort of a device to say that, the heart of a fool, that most important central thing, out of it flow the issues of life, we learned in Proverbs 3 or 4, I forget which now. Out of that heart flows, the issues of life. It's as simple as that. But the heart of a fool is not even as valuable as the lips of a wise man. In 12:23, a prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims folly. Now, I've only got a couple of minutes, and so maybe this is the place we'll have to end up. Because 12:23, brethren, suggests something that we'll find later in another study in Proverbs, in very different words, but the same idea, that is really critically important. And I've had people get mad at me because of this. A prudent man does what with knowledge? Well, what? I thought we were the light of the world. I thought, well then how come Solomon wrote any of the Proverbs? Why didn't he just give it all to himself?
see, it's kind of counterintuitive, and it really makes you wonder. But anyway, what he's saying is that the truly wise man also knows that it is foolish to say everything you know. A wise person is not only wise and exclusively wise because of what he says, he's also wise because he chooses at the appropriate time to do what? To keep his mouth shut. I had a Baptist preacher one time just all up in my face because I told him that we've been discussing baptism, talking about Acts 2:38 and everything, and then I told him, and I have not told you my most important argument, hoping we'd come back and have another one. And he just freaked out. There was something really slimy about that. That I was being duplicitous and deceitful, and it was just unacceptable that I would, you know, not tell him on the spot. Well, I could see on the spot he wasn't very receptive anyway. You know, and we'd have liked to have another study, didn't get it. But am I necessarily a fool, deceitful, somehow sinful, because I choose not to tell you something? No, a prudent man will keep knowledge there when it's popular.
It's just like if you have some top secret information, you want somebody to, you need to share that with that person. Are you going to tell them the whole thing, or are you going to find out if they can be trusted first before you tell them all of it?
There you are. First level needs to know, and all that, you're being wise enough to check it out.
Now, I'm going to give you a minute over, but let me just finish up the last half of that particular one. A prudent man conceals knowledge, but what does the heart of fools do?
They say absolutely everything. Have you ever heard somebody say, I'm going to give them a piece of my mind, and then they stop with only one piece? When somebody gives you a piece of their mind, what do they really do? They give you the whole truckload, right? And usually in anger. See? So the prudent man gives it out in pieces. He knows which ones he's going to keep and which ones he's not. He's looking ahead. He is organizing the material. He's going to arrange this one here and that one there. The prudent man has a whole battle plan and strategy. He's thinking about what he's doing. What is the fool doing? Just spewing. So next time you catch yourself on a roll, particularly with your kids, just hope they don't know this problem. Let's close in prayer.